Okay, let's begin now with Perek Gimel. Perek Gimel Pasuk Aleph. Now we begin Aleph. A new Perek Gimel Pasuk Aleph. We begin a new sugi, the sugi of the statue of Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar, what?
Excuse me, yesterday's was on the screen already?
No, it's not. I'm sorry, I didn't put it up yet. It's later today. Yes, so we begin here at Perek Gimel Pasuk Aleph. We begin to discuss the a new theme, a new chapter, a new era in the life of Nebuchadnezzar, where he makes for himself a massive statue, and he commands the entire world to come and bow down to this statue. Now we will see a little soon the Bitsudos, he alludes to this, that the entire purpose of creating the statue was in order to cause the Jews, the hidden agenda of building the statue was not so much the self-glorification of Nebuchadnezzar, but he wanted to use this as a means to make trouble for the Jewish people. The Nebuchadnezzar's accomplishment in life was he destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. That was his greatest pride. He succeeded in conquering the world, including Yerushalayim. According to the various midrashim of Nebuchadnezzar, it's hard to understand. He was around at the time of Sancheriv, which goes back 125 years before, which obviously is very difficult to understand. How could he live so long? But he obviously had a very strong connection to the defeat. He was traumatized by the defeat of Sancheriv. When Sancheriv conquered the entire world, there was only one place where he was unable to conquer, and that was Yerushalayim. He marched with his entire army of millions of people. The numbers, well, I've got the numbers of a few hundred thousand generals.
185,000
generals, which represented a very large army of millions of people. And that was the last march, the last strong holdout in the world, the civilized world, which had yet to conquer. And miraculously, all 185,000 soldiers, generals, died at the gate of Yerushalayim. And obviously, Nebuchadnezzar was traumatized from this event. According to some of the midrashim, he was present. He was there. He was there 125 years ago. He lived a very long life, hard for us to understand. Or according to other interpretations, whatever means, he was influenced by the event which happened before he was born. And now that he succeeded in pulling this off, in conquering Yerushalayim, in his mind this represented that he conquered the world, he conquered the lower world and the upper world. Now the Jews were taken to exile, those survivors, and he wanted to further make trouble for the Jews. So he built this statue, and he commanded everyone should come and bow down. He knew that his subjects and the Jewish people living in Babel would refuse to bow down, because they do not worship idols, and he would use this as an excuse to purge them from his malchus, and to basically continue his conquest of the upper world of the service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. The Jews are in exile, but I guess it bothered him that there are still pockets of resistance out there. There are still some people that still hold on to their ancient beliefs that there is a creator, there is a Ribbono Shel Olam, and deep down they yearn that one day the Mikdash will be rebuilt. So obviously there's something lacking in his success. He has to go further, but the world's not going to tolerate him just going out and randomly killing people. How could a king, a civilized king of the world, just go and select people? Oh, you're Jewish? I'm going to kill you. It would not be accepted in society. So he had to come up with a plan. And the plan was he would build a statue, and he would give a royal edict. Everyone must come to the statue and bow down in the inauguration of the statue. And he knows the Jews will never come. Oh, you're not going to come. You're violating the law. You must be killed. And this will be tolerated in society. Society will allow me to kill the remaining Jews because they're not paying homage to the king by bowing down to his statue. So that's what says here, Pasuk Aleph, Nebuchadnezzar Malka, Nebuchadnezzar the king. Now let me just take one step further. The Perek Aleph and Perek Beis we realize is the foreshadowing for what's happening now. Mm-hmm. Just like in the Megillah, everything that happens until Balayla Hu Nodadashnas HaMelech, all of the events are, everything is being put in place. Vashti is killed, Esther is selected, Esther is made this queen, and it's a secret that she's Jewish, and now the Megillah first begins. Balayla Hu Nodadashnas HaMelech, the miracle, and then all of a sudden comes in Mordechai and the Sefer HaZichronos comes. Everyone knows the story of the Sefer HaZichronos. Who did me a favor that I did not repay? It was Mordechai, so on and so forth. But the everything until Perek Vav is all the foreshadowing, is the backdrop for the miracle. So Perek Alf, Perek Beis is pretty much the backdrop to a certain degree for what's going to come down Perek Gimel, because Perek Alf, Perek Gimel shows that there were people that were appointed to a very high position in government, Hananya, Mishael, Azaria, and it's important to note that these were leaders. These were people that were well known throughout the entire country. They served in Bavel. Bavel was the capital of, there was a Medina called Bavel, and there was a city called Bavel. Just like there is New York State and there is New York City. So the state was, the country was Bavel, and it was a city. And who was the leader? Who were the people that was appointed to govern Bavel? Daniel, Hananya, Mishael, Azaria. These four people that we'll see a little later on, and Daniel was not present. Daniel was sent on a mission. He was out of the country when this event that we're going to learn about occurred. So he did not get caught up. And according to Chazal, Nebuchadnezzar sent him away deliberately because he knew that Daniel would not bow down, and he knew that Daniel would have to be killed. And to kill Daniel, there would be too much political fallout by killing Daniel. But Hananya, Mishael, Azaria, who were not, they were not the vice president. They were only just the statues of senators or governors. They were not as chashiv. They would be the ideal people which she can make an example of throughout the entire world, that Jews, their role in this world is over. They are finished. The Mikdash has been destroyed. They're in exile. And now in exile, we're gonna give them the last Makkev HaPatish. We're going to write them out. Yeah.
Why can't you say the opposite? From the first story with Daniel.
Yeah.
That he saw there was a God.
He bowed down. And Nebuchadnezzar admitted. Nebuchadnezzar even admitted that there is a God.
Now, let's say he's trying to show the world
that there is no God.
No, that there is a God.
Yeah.
By building this statue and making everybody bow down.
Yeah.
They didn't bow down and they survived.
But he didn't know that. If from this simple, that's a very deep plan what you're suggesting to Nebuchadnezzar. From the very simple understanding of the psukim, it could be there are midrash that want to learn some approach, but the very simple understanding is that Nebuchadnezzar did not have good intentions. Nebuchadnezzar, obviously a very complicated person. He destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. But then at one point in time, he had Charata, he destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. When this dream bothered him to no end, and he summoned his wise men. They told him, "Well, the only one that can reveal the answer are the Jews, the Kohen Gadol, the Urim V'Tumim." And so he said, "So bring the Kohen Gadol, the Urim V'Tumim." Says, "You destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. What do you expect?" So they said, "Who told me to destroy the Beis HaMikdash? You advisors, I'm going to have you all killed because you gave me bad advice, and because of your bad advice, I'm no longer able to find a solution to my problem." So at that moment in time, he had charata. Then he it's what it says. He had charata.
But it's like Paro,
right? It's a wishy washy. He vacillates from one extreme to the other extreme. He's an extremely complicated person. All of the Ishei HaTanach are not your average plumber Joe. The Ishei HaTanach are extremely complicated people, which vacillate between all different forms of ideas. But okay, let's see over here. Nebuchadnezzar.
This statue was of Nebuchadnezzar himself, or was it a Baltazar?
It doesn't say what the image was. Not at least that I'm aware of. Maybe there are some Midrashim. Perhaps it was in his own image.
Because there's archaeological evidence that Nebuchadnezzar built an entire city for a Baltazar.
Yeah, that's certain. I mean, that fits with the Psukim. I mean, he built idols. He built idols which represented himself, and he told them to bow down. It appears that the idol was in his image. does appear so. They say during the Persian Gulf War, there was a lot of talk how Saddam Hussein was obsessed with Nebuchadnezzar. That's well known. He had an obsession. And we all know from the images that we remember from the Persian Gulf War, wherever you could not walk more than 4 amos in Iraq and not see a picture of Saddam. His picture was posted all over Iraq, wherever you turn. He was upset, and Nebuchadnezzar also, Shagas, an image of himself.
One of his army divisions, was the Nebuchadnezzar division.
He called by the Nebuchadnezzar, correct. So Nebuchadnezzar, Malchus Paskalif, Avad Selem Dizahov, he made an image out of gold, Rume, the height, Amin Shitin, it was 60 amos tall, Posi, the width was Amin Shis, that's a stick. It's 60 amos tall, and it's 6 amos wide. Now, it's impossible for a structure of gold, which is extremely heavy, to stand at a height. Let's assume that an amma is 2 feet. Let's be machmir. It's 2 feet. So it's 120 feet. 120 feet is that's 12 stories. That's a massive structure, and it's only 12 feet wide. And you can count the tiles over here on the ground. 12 feet. Each tile is 1 foot. Can you imagine a structure that is 12 stories tall and only 12 amos wide? It's structurally impossible. It's impossible for any type of structure like this to stand, even made from wood. It's impossible. But it says here, Shisin Rume Amin Shis. The height was 60 amos. Possibly the width was Amin Shis was 6. Akime Bibikas Duro. That is the name of the valley. It was a valley, Bimedinas Bavel, Medina Bavel. Bimedinas Bavel, who he was done deliberately. Who was the authority of Bavel? Besides the fact that Bavel, the Medina of Bavel, was the capital of the Malchus of Bavel and of the Kastim. They all merged together at this point in time. It was also under the authority of Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. So who would be at the ceremony, the inaugural ceremony of this statue? The mayor, the governor, the senators of this city, and who were the governors? The Jews. And the Jews would refuse to bow down. Now Nebuchadnezzar would have an excuse to make an example of the Jews and to continue his conquest of Yehuda, of the Beis HaMikdash. Now, the Medrash says, how could it, to summarize, how could it possibly stand? I'll read Rashi one moment. Rashi quotes this Medrash. How can such a structure stand? So the answer was, it did not stand. It kept on collapsing. What did they do? They built for it a foundation, a massive foundation, which we're not familiar with the structural. I'm going to have to ask an architect how you would do this. And the foundation had to be of the best of heavy metal. What is the heaviest metal? Gold. Where do they get the gold for the foundation? From the Beis HaMikdash. They used all of this gold that they plundered from the Beis HaMikdash to serve as the base, the anchor for this massive statue. Let's see the Rashi. Rashi Pasik Alf Avad Molo Liboy Lasos Tselem Shelzov. His heart was filled with a crazy idea to make an image of gold. Pasi Amin Shis Akime Im Ein Ovyo Elashesh. If the width, Rashi is asking the obvious question, if the width is only 6 amos, Heach Yochol Lamoid Begoiva Amin Shis, and how is it possible for such a structure to stand at to a height of 60 amos? Omer Bibi Mamidin Oisoi Enochinami. They would erect it, the Neufel, and it would fall. Ad Shehevioi Kol Zohov Shel Yerushalayim. They brought all of the gold that they plundered from the Chorban Yerushalayim, the Shafchai, and they poured it as a demos, as a platform, an anchor, a base, Al Raglov, on the legs of this statue. Lekai Mashinemar Uzahavam, their gold, Lenido Yihya, Yecheskel is predicting that all of the gold of Yerushalayim that Hashem bestowed upon the Jewish people will be taken away, Lenido, to excommunication. And in this context, it means it will be used for something disgusting. Something that is excommunicated means that it's banished. an idol, Avodah Zarah, is the ultimate form of nidui. It's the ultimate object which is put in, is banished, is put away. The gold of Yerushalayim was used as the foundation for an idol. This, of course, had a very powerful effect, psychological effect, upon the survivors of the Churban Beis HaMikdash, where they saw their gold, all of the gold that they had in Yerushalayim, their wealth, was now being used as the foundation of idolatry, to deny the existence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Everything here is being done by design. It's not just an accident. Yeah.
Where is this quoted from?
This Medrash, Eicha Rabba.
Oh.
Psicha in the beginning. Here the Eicha Rabba is the Psicha, right? It's the introduction to the Medrash, so it's Ois Chof Gimel.
But they used the vessels from the Beis HaMikdash.
Correct. He also did that. After 70 years.
So it couldn't be...
Another idea. What?
Couldn't be all
design. It couldn't be literally everything right. There were some kalim which represented the service, the Beis HaMikdash, but the general gold that was plundered from Yerushalayim was taken and melted down to this platform to support this idol. It was a psychological method, tool, that was used by the Nebuchadnezzar in order to show them, I have conquered, I have prevailed. Okay, possibly. Nebuchadnezzar, Malka, Nebuchadnezzar, the king, Shalachi sent out a message throughout the entire world. What was the message? Lenichnash, to gather. Now, I have no idea what these words are. And Rashi and the Mitzudos do not tell us. It just means that I think there are seven words. All the various types of public officials, whether it's the governor and the senators and the congressmen and your councilman and the mayor and everyone that you could imagine. Le'achash dar pina. We have that in the Megillah Esther. Some type of government official. Signaya, another government official.
Deputies.
Ufacha vosa, another one.
Like Pachos.
A governor in the Megillah Pachos. Adar Goz Raya, Lashon Gzeira, those who issue the edicts, those who write the laws. Gidov Raya, I think this is like a tax collector. Disavraya means which rule. And these two words, I think, if I'm saying, go together. Gidov Raya, Disavraya, Tif Toye. I think these three words go together, which mean the rulers which are appointed and rule with power. Savraya lashon of power. Tif toyeh, I think, which means are appointed. The leaders which are appointed and given a degree of authority. So basically it just means over here, we have over here a collection of all the government officials. V'chol shultonei medina. So all of the shultan, the rulers of the medina. L'mei say, the edict was given, they must come and gather. L'mei say to come, lachanukas tzalma, for the inauguration of the image, di hakem, which has been erected, Nebuchadnezzar malko, by Nebuchadnezzar the king. Gimel, beidayin. There's a lot of verbosity in, it's not verbosity, every single word is precise, there's a message, but from our perspective, in the simple reading, there appears to be a lot of verbosity. Pas the gimel, after the edict was issued, the people came. Beidayin at that then, miskanshim, it was gathered. Achashtar Penaya and the Signaya and Ufachavosa and the Adar Goz Raya Gidov Raya Disovraya Tiftoye, the same exact names mentioned in the previous pasuk. V'chol shultonei medinasa, they came, they listened. Everyone that was told to come came. If you didn't come, you knew that you were in trouble. They all showed up. V'chol shultonei medinasa lachanuka salma, for the inauguration of the salma di hakem nivuchanetz malka, which he had erected. V'koymin, and they stood. Everyone stood likovel tzalma in the presence of the image di hakem nivuchadnetzar. Everyone was standing there. Okay, so the issue was the order was given and everyone arrived. Now, v'chorozo korei v'choyil. A choroz. What's a choroz? An announcement. The call. A call. You have this in the Mishnah. The Mishnah says when a person is taken to be executed, there was a choroz yotzei lefanav. As he would be taken out to be executed, there was an announcement made, this person has committed a terrible avera, the Bezin has found him guilty, and we're taking him out for execution.
Sanhedrin. By Yeshu
also, correct. Right, it was changed. V'charoza karei v'chol means with strength. If they had loudspeakers, people that had extremely loud voices would scream out at this moment in time, l'chon omrin. Now, l'chon means to you. Now, this expression is not the way we would write today. It's not. It's hard to translate, but it basically means l'chon to you, omrin. It said three different categories of nations. This is a revealing pasuk to understand the civilized world at that time. The civilized world was divided into Am Maya, number one. Number two is Amaya with an aleph. And number three is Velisha Naya. Now, what are these three different terms? So let's look at Rashi first. Pasuk Dalid. Rashi just says, L'chon Amin Amaya L'chem, to you, call Shalom Aleichem. Have you been? I haven't seen you in a long time. L'chem, to you, call Amin V'alashonis Oimrim Mechruz Machroiz Mitzvah HaMelech B'Mishlachas Melech. An announcement was made through the agency of the king. Now let's look at the Mitzudos Tzion. The Mitzudos Tzion says, Amimaya Heim Ha'umo Sheyesh L'chem Elo A V'Torah. And Amaya is a nation which has a god, obviously a false god. They worship the sun, the moon, the stars, constellations, whatever it is. And the Torah means they have laws. So it means some type of structured country. Okay, the country's beliefs are false and they're mistaken, but the country, it does at least have some structure. They have a god and they have a set of laws. That is the definition of Amamaya. Next word, Umaya. Heim b'loy eloka uv'loy Torah. This is just a collection of people that they are all united, but they do not have a god, and they do not have a separate set of laws.
Atheists.
Well, not necessarily. I don't know.
No,
it just says they're lacking a god.
Of the legitimacy of the Jewish people.
Okay, let's ulishai no heim hachalukim bilishonosam bein mibnei eloka vitoro ubein zulosam. This is ulishana, means you have a group of people and they have nothing in common. The people, they live together, but they speak different languages. There are pockets of people living together. They are chalukim bilishonosam mibnei. Bein bebnei Eloa, the Torah, the Lishanai means a language. They just live together, but everyone does their own thing. There is nothing uniting them whatsoever. So three different types of country. So here, here we are. The pasuk Dalam Matad Lecharosa Karei V'Chayil. And Nasa was made very loud. L'chon to you, Amrin, to you it is said. To you it is said, to the entire world, whether you're from the Amamaya, whether you're from the Umaya, or whether you are from the Velishonaya. Here's what we're going to say now. Pasuk Hei, the Idonah. Everyone get ready. At the moment, the Sishmi'un, when you will hear Kol Karna, the horn blow. The Kol Karna means the sound of the horn, Mashro Kisa. Now Mashro Kisa means to whistle.
Right.
When you hear the shrieking of the trumpet of the shofar, and when you hear Kasros, now Kasros, these are different types of musical instruments. Some learn that Kasros is a drum. Okay, you bang on with your hands. Sabka is a navel, a type of flute. Pisan Tirin, I do not know. I don't think it's known. It's not clear what this is. Most of you have to, I may have to go look in Das Mikra.
Modern Hebrew, yeah. That's the word for piano.
Piano. Pisan Tirin is a piano? Okay,
yeah,
very good. Very good, fascinating. And Sum Foyin Yod, it's like a symphony.
Right.
So what does that refer to? Oh, but it's some type of musical instrument. V'chol Zinei Zimora. And all other musical instruments, which include when you hear the sound of the horn, the sound of the trumpet shrieking, and you hear the kasrois, which are the drums banging, and the sabcha, and the the flute, the navel is a flute being played, and the piano, the pisantrin, and the symphonia, the symphony orchestra, everyone, could be, I don't know, it's definitely something here to focus on. I should get a hold of the Das Mikra, I'm sure they will go into this in much more detail. The whole zinezim, or all the different types of...
It could be that the Greek were like...
The Greek is taken from this.
It could be was taken from
this. The chol zinez, there were all different types of musical instruments. Tiplun, what should everyone do? Tiplun v'siskidun l'tzelem dahava. Everyone should, tiplun is to fall. Mm-hmm. Immediately fall down. V'siskidun, prostrate. Lie flat on the ground.
That's a word we've had before.
To the gold image, which the king has erected. Pasuk Vav. Umandi lo yipel. Anyone that refuses from the entire world that has been gathered over here together for the inauguration of this image, the yiskud, and to fly flat, beishato, at that moment of time when the music begins to play, yisremei, he will be lifted up. They'll pick him up. Legoi atun, lego means two. Atun nura yokidta. Legoi atun really is one expression. Legoi atun means into nura, the fire yokidta that is been ignited, that is flaring, that is burning. Anyone that refused to bow down at this point in time will be lifted up and thrown into the fire. Pasuk Zayin, kol kovel dina. Because of this, kol kovel means because of this, because everyone was terrified, everyone in the world was present and heard the instructions. Bei zimna, at that moment, at the time, zimna. Interesting over here to note that over here that we're changing from idon to zimna. These are two words which really mean the same thing. The instructions was beidona. Back in pasuk hey, the instructions were the crows was beidona. At the time, the idon, and now it says bei zimna. It's the same translation. At that time. Kol kovel dina bei zimna. Well, I'm sorry. This is really a repetition of the previous. But let's just read the pasuk together. Kol kovel dina, because of this instruction or due to this instruction, bei zimna at that time, kidi shamin, when it was heard, kol amaya, kol karna, all of the nations, the sound of the keren, mash roiki saw that is whistling, and the kasros, the drums, the sabacha, we said was the navel, the harp, and the pisanterin, that is the piano, the chol znei zimora, all the different types of musical instruments, naflin. So at that moment in time, when because of this edict was issued, at the time when the music was played, naflin kol amaya umaya velishonaya sogdin, they bow down with selim dahava, the gold image, di hakim divuchanetz malka, which the king erected. So the people listened. They were told what to do, and it was done. Now notice something very interesting here in this pasuk. There is one word that is missing. The instruction, the sympathy. The sympathy was missing. The instructions were when you hear the sound of the horn whistle, and you hear the sound of the piano, and the drum, and the navel, and all of the musical instruments, you shall bow down. But then it says, when it took place, there was one thing missing, and that we'll discuss in one moment. Before we get to that point, I want to discuss something else that's very, very important. There's a very important Rashi here. Let's just go back a few words of Rashi. What is the significance of the Keren Mash Ro Kisa, the horn that is whistling? So let's look here in Pasuk Hey. Bidona Ditashmeun Kol Karno Mash Ro Kisa Kol Hakeren Shoyrekes. The sound of the horn whistling. Kimo, it's a Pasuk in Zechariah. Asharuka lohem v'akab seim. Hashem says, I will whistle to them and gather them into Yerushalayim. Rashi is quoting a pasuk in Zechariah that refers to the coming of Mashiach. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu will blow the shofar will whistle, and that will be the calling for Klal Yisrael to return kibbutz, the signal of kibbutz Golios. And over here, we're taking that exact same term. This is a very the reason why this is a very popular term is because the Rishonim, they love this word because the letters of the alphabet are backwards. Shin, Reish, Kuf. Shin, Reish, Kuf. So there's a lot of Jewish. Why are the letters backwards? The letters go forward, and sometimes the letters go backwards. Okay, that is a side point, but it's a pasuk that refers specifically to the time of Kibbutz Golios, the coming of Moshiach. And here, look what's happening. Nebuchadnezzar, after he has destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, and after the Jews have settled in Bavel, and the Jews have become successful in Bavel, they're doing very well, to the point where Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah represent them in the highest positions of government. They're doing phenomenally well. They have influence, they have power. What should the Jewish people be doing at this point in time? They should be returning, they should be doing everything in their power to return to the Beis HaMikdash, to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, to bring the Geula. They've learned the lessons of the Churban, taken it to heart, and instead, in other words, now was the time when HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent down to this world a Shefa. He bestowed a Ruach, a spirit of what it says in Zechariah. What's Nevuah? Nevuah is prophecy. When you see moments of holiness coming to this world, Asharuk Olohem, I will whistle to the Jewish people, Vakabtseim, and cause them to return. But unfortunately, the Jewish people did not hear the signal of Hashem. They did not seize the moment. They did not take advantage of this opportunity, of this divine favor that existed in the world at this moment in time. So who took it? Who took it? When HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends Shefa, it's for Klal Yisrael to take and to use for themselves and to bring Geula. But if Klal Yisrael is not going to seize the moment, it's going to go to the Goyim. And the Goyim are going to seize that Shefa, and they're going to use it for their purposes. And that's exactly what Nebuchadnezzar did. The Jewish people don't want to go and rally, come together, and fulfill Ashar Kol Hem V'Kabseim. I'll take it for myself, Nebuchadnezzar says. He took, subconsciously, he took that chef of Ashar Kol Hem V'Kabseim, and he whistled to the entire world, everyone come to Bavel and worship me. Worship me, worship my tzela. So Rashi here is extremely precise in focusing on the word karna mashro kisa. When you hear the horn whistle, this horn that's whistling was meant to be the horn of the Melech HaMashiach blowing the shofar to come back to the Beis HaMikdash, to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. Klal Yisrael weren't interested. They were sleeping. So it doesn't go to waste. If we're not going to take it, someone will take it. The Goyim took it. Nebuchadnezzar took it. So he blew the shofar and he whistled to the entire world, come and worship me. And he was successful. And this was a terrible kinshuk on Klal Yisrael. And all the gold of Yerushalayim was there to support this. It was the foundation. It was the financial basis for this statue. And it was a terrible sorrow for Klal Yisrael. We're going to see what's going to happen now. Yeah.
Was there a Navi at this time that should have, like, Ishaya at the time?
Daniel, Hananiah, Daniel, what? Chagai is Harim Alochi.
If Rashi's Pshat is correct, how come there was nobody lecturing them and giving them...
Well, they were Ezra, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah, Chagai, Zechariah, Malachi. They were at this point in time, and they were lecturing. We're learning over Daniel. We're learning the Sefer. We're learning Daniel, Ezra, Nehemiah. We're going to know what they have to know, how they led Klal Yisrael, how they guided them. Look, what about Yeshaya? What about Yecheskel? Klal Yisrael have a history of not listening to their leaders.
Yeah, but you don't see in Yeshaya. You see it. You see Yeshaya
lecturing them.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, we have yet to learn. We're going to learn. Planning is a lot of lecturing. We're going to learn.
If he's grabbing it at this point in Paris, Gimel,
yeah,
because they didn't take advantage of it,
yeah,
you would think somebody would say, hey, folks, This is your opportunity. Come on.
Yes, that's exactly what Rashi is telling us. It's all alluded to. Not everything is spelled out. We were not there at that time to hear the Rabbanim giving Musar. But the Musar they were giving is exactly this.
But it's hidden. Where's the open?
It's not hidden. I just told it to you. Rashi says, Karna Mashroki. So Rashi tells us that Pasuk, and that's how the Mefarshim, they understand that this was happening here. Yeah?
This is after the Churban. How many years?
This is about 50 years after the Churban.
50 years.
About approximately. We'll clarify the dates.
70 years later.
What?
They knew already the Klal Yisrael. 70 years was the limit on the
Uchanan. There was a, yes, that was tradition, absolutely. Yeshaya and Yecheskel.
So were they just sitting around saying, well, you know, 70 years is going to come. The heck with this guy, he ain't going to be around long time.
No, but there should have been a more active process in bringing the Geula. They were sleeping. Yeah.
Is there any significance to the fact that this takes place in the Dura Valley?
I'm sure there is, but I do not know. I didn't come across it yet.
That is also the scene of the Y bones.
Yecheskel. Interesting. I didn't come across it. I ran over it a little bit, but hopefully we'll come across a lot of these things as we go through. Absolutely. There's definitely a connection. 100%. Okay, one other very important point before we conclude. Yeah. Yeah.
You said that at the some.
Oh, I'm coming to that right now.
Yeah, so I just want to say that I don't think it's missing because that prefix. Sum is like in English, S-Y-N means together, and phonia means sound. So that's equivalent to Kol Zinei Zimra.
Okay, that's an idea. That's an idea. Okay, but the word is still missing.
All right, fine.
So there's something lacking.
It's an equivalent.
Right. It's not an absolute absence. There's nothing. But there's something. A little bit of something missing. So the Mitsudos picks up upon this. In the, I don't know if you have this in your Mitsudos in the parentheses. Let me just tell it to you after, then we'll read it inside very quickly. He says that. This was done deliberately. Because you have to remember the hidden agenda. If you read the Pesukim very simply, if you'll take out the history books, you'll just read, yeah, Nebuchadnezzar was an egomaniac, and he built a massive statue. He told the whole world to come bow down. Power got to him, and that's what it was. No. There was an agenda. He was obsessed with his conquest. He was affected as a child of the Churban of Sancheriv. His whole life was to accomplish what Sancheriv could not. He did. He conquered the Beis HaMikdash. He conquered Yerushalayim. And he thought he won. But he saw he didn't win. He saw that the Jews are doing very well. They have very nice shuls. They're in Galus. And they are Vidasehem Shoynos Mikolam. He saw that there's something lacking. This whole perek, this whole statue was all done for one purpose only. As an excuse to destroy the Jewish people in Galus. That's the whole purpose. And he just couldn't do it. He just can't go out one day, wake up and say, okay, all the Jews have to be killed. They'll kill him. This is not a civilized modern society, equal rights. But if the king tells everyone to come and do something and they don't want to come, they marry the Malchus. Then it will be tolerated. So what did he do? He deliberately, he told everyone when all the musical instruments, they're going to be, whatever the number, let's say they're going to be 10 musical instruments. When they're played, then everyone must come back. And if you don't bow down, you're going to be executed. And then they only played 9 musical instruments. Again, the instructions were, when the 10 musical instruments are played, bow down. And then they played 9. The symphonia was missing. The Jews didn't bow down. That's going to be the next pasuk. The Jews did not bow down when they played. They have to be executed. So there was a trial. And the trial was, the Jews had a good lawyer, and they got off on a technicality. Parking ticket technicality, that the law was when the 10 musical instruments are played. But there were only 9 plates. Now, Nebuchadnezzar purposely did it. He wanted them to get off on a technicality in order to create a buzz, in order to create a whole public spectacle where there will be a trial and everyone will be talking about it and they'll get off on a technicality. In the process, the whole world will be watching and then we'll do it again with all 10 musical instruments. and now everyone will be watching. And when they won't bow down the second time, then we got him, and this time the whole world will be watched. It won't be only 60 million people watching the debate. There'll be 300 million people watching the debate. Who's going to be watching the next debate after what happened in the first debate? First debate, there was only 50, between 50 and 70. Chilukei Deos, how many millions of people were watching in America? But the next debate, after such an incredible defeat, is it going to happen again? Well, there'll be even more people. It all builds up the excitement. Let's see what it says. Let's just read the parentheses and then we'll stop. Pasuk Zayin. Let's go to the entire mitzvah. This is David Pasuk Zayin Kol Kavel Bavur Hakruz Hazeh. Because of this kruz, L'chein Bezeh Ha'am Kasher. The people they followed suit. Kasher Shamu Kol Amim Kol Keren Hashav Vechulu Naflu Kulam Al Paneim V'Shtachvul Elat Zelen. Now parentheses. In the mitzvah, how we have this in your yours. V'Loi Zocher Kan Sum Foynya. What happened when it came to the actual fulfillment? The symphony is missing. So the simple answer is, Dr. Friedman said, is that simply it means it's a prefix, it's some type of expression that's included in all the different types of musical instruments. But if you want to say something a little bit deeper, you can say as follows: Midas, it was done deliberately. He was an evil genius. Nebuchadnezzar. He deliberately instructed that they do not play this symphony, so the Jews should get off on a technicality, so we can make a spectacle out of this and do it again. Midas lo yivu litain lo yivu. Why? He wanted to give them litain pischein peh, to give an opening, an excuse to me shelo yishtachave ki yucholoymar haloi lo yivu hasumfonya. They did not bring this instrument kasher kora b'chad. Like the announcement was made. There was a loud announcement that only when all 10 musical instruments are played must everyone bow down. Over here, only 9 instruments were made. Ki etzem ha-kavanim, because why did Nebuchadnezzar build the statue? It wasn't about him. It was about denying Hashem. Ki etzem ha-kavanim hoyo li-lachshil es Yisrael, to cause them to stumble. Udvar ha-melech shultoin ein lo-hoshif. And the truth was, if the Jewish people had denied the edict, they would have been killed, because that's the way government was in those days. There was no mercy. The rule was you had to bow down. You did not bow down, they would have been killed. But then, if they would have been killed on the spot, it would not have been publicized that Nebuchadnezzar has prevailed over our Kodesh Baruch Hu. The im yoviu hakol, if they'll bring everyone, the im kol zelo yishtachvu maloy b'misoson. What will he get out of this? He would not be able to show the world that he has prevailed over Hakadosh Baruch Hu. Lezeh, he deliberately was clever. Nebuchadnezzar mon es hasimfunya. He denied the symphony. He told them that it should not play. B'choshvay im lo yishtachvu adayin ein lechem mishamavus. By doing so, now they will not be guilty of treason, of denying the verdict of the king. Not only treason, but denying the king. Now maybe the second time around, he'll be able to get the Jews to bow down. And that's revealing a whole new point. It was a much greater pleasure for Nebuchadnezzar than destroying the Jewish people. It would be a much greater degree of success if he would be able to convince the Jews to deny Hashem. It's one thing to succeed in conquering the nation of Klal Yisrael by wiping out the Jewish people. That's one level of success. But in his mind, it's a much greater level of success of letting them live and having the Jews themselves deny the existence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Mm-hmm. That would be the ultimate success.
Was the environment such that the Jews would have done it?
Well, obviously not, because the end was that they did not bow down. They held out.
So that plot and intent was...
He failed.
Correct.
Hashem will guarantee the survival of the Jewish people no matter what, one way or another. But if he would have planned to have them wiped out, the Klal Yisrael would anyway have survived, because we know that Klal Yisrael is going to survive one way or another. But the point over here is, look what's happening. The Nebuchadnezzar, there's a hidden agenda. Everything is more than meets the eye. and his real goal was, I don't want you to die, but I want you to be mechallel the shem Hashem, disgrace Hashem's name, your God's name, by denying his existence, and the way you'll do that is by bowing down to my image.
But the Meshavah then is different than the first one.
And then,
first one he gave, he knew they weren't going to bow down, the second time also, and then he would have the excuse to wipe them out.
No, so he held that he would weaken them. By drawing out the process, he would, number one, he would publicize this matter, and number two, he would weaken the Jewish people, their resolve to serve Hashem, maybe now.
Yeah, I agree, that's the second part. The first part was that he would be able to wipe them out.
Yeah, in a Hanami. But he didn't want to wipe them out, that's why he denied the Symphona. Yeah.
It's not only that. It's very much parallel to the story of Megillas Esther, where there's an entrapment, there's something, and then Hashem is angry and withdraws his support for Klal Yisrael by putting them in this position.
It's a test.
And then if they submit, then Nebuchadnezzar succeeds in getting Hashem angry at Klal Yisrael.
Correct,
and
correct, correct.
Support.
He's entrapping Klal Yisrael against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He's doing something, he's saying something more sophisticated.
Right.
It's a very deep idea. He's saying, it's not me, I'm just going to put you in a bad position, you and your creator. I want to cause strife.
Yeah.
Right, right. Very, very good. Okay, so we'll stop here.